Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on where you're joining us from, and welcome back. This is our first webinar at PJRFSI after our little summer vacation that we decided to take. Welcome and thank you for coming. The title of this presentation is Cybersecurity and the Role of the Food Safety Manager. My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team at Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. I'll be facilitating today's webinar and offering technical support to our speakers. Today, we're very excited to be welcoming back Dr. John Spink of Michigan State University for this presentation, and we'll be introducing him to you all a little later on in the broadcast. But I'm going to go ahead now and introduce our first speaker, and that's Paul DeMarin. He is the Senior Vice President of Food Safety and Supply Chain here at PJRFSI. He joined us in January of 2020 and has over 35 years of experience in the hospitality, service, and retail agri-food sectors. Paul's also a board member of the OFPA, that's the Ontario Food Protection Association, and he's also an advisory council member with the George Washington University School of Business for their digital marketing certificate program. Before he came to PJRFSI, Paul worked for 17 years in the certification industry with clients in sectors from food safety and supply chain to brand protection and quality. Paul's also worked for many years in management system certification. And prior to that, he was a professional chef and a consultant for over 20 years. So Paul, welcome back to the world of webinars. You can take it away whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you so much, Amy. And you're right. It is great to be back. It's very exciting. We're here with a whole new set of webinars. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Dr. John, for sharing your knowledge and being here with us today. Today, we're going to discuss cybersecurity as it relates to the food space. This is very important, and it's certainly extremely timely. Amy, I'm not sure. Today, just briefly before Dr. John starts here, we all know that risk is inevitable. It's in every business and at every level of the supply chain. It's how we can successfully identify and manage those risks, particularly during a time of crisis such as COVID that can make or break your brand's reputation. And since the start of COVID in late February 2020, we all know that the effects of the virus were felt all around the world, and it forced many global organizations into completely uncharted waters. I really believe that many years are going to be spent dissecting the lessons that we've learned during the pandemic. However, we now have a wealth of information that we can unpack. There are still disruptions in supply, logistics, in labor, especially visibility, contracts, border control, and certainly cybersecurity threats. And they've all hit food safety and supply chain leaders in waves. And also the backlog created by the disruptions have created shockwaves that are still being felt. That may be a little dramatic, but it's true. And for the last few days, I just got back late last night from a global supply chain conference with various executive leaders from major corporations. And the common theme throughout all of my discussions were the disruption in labor and cybersecurity threats. And everybody felt that this is going to be continuing for at least another few years from the supply chain perspective. You know, there's an old adage that once we know better, we can do better and we must do better. So with that, I'm very excited to move over and introduce you to my colleague, Dr. John Spink. Dr. John, thank you. He is the director for Food Fraud Initiative, and he's the assistant professor at the Supply Chain Management Business College from Michigan State University. Since 2013, John has been the director of the Food Fraud Initiative at Michigan and certainly one of the global experts. His early research and industry engagement supported the foundation of the food fraud prevention, including as a member of the GFSI Food Fraud Think Tank that developed their first compliance requirements, and also as the lead author on the article defining the public health threat for food fraud, which is most widely cited definition of the term today. And also their food fraud prevention, MOOC, or the free massive open online course, are some of the most common training resources that are used today. With that, again, welcome everybody. I'm going to be interacting with Dr. John throughout the session. And Dr. John, I'll pass it over to you.
All right. Thank you. Well, it's great to be back. Really appreciate your organization. We've worked together a lot in the past. So cybersecurity and the role of food safety manager. This is something that we've been looking at the last couple months, and it really came together in this presentation. I think we're a little bit ahead of the curve for a lot of you that are thinking about this. But Paul, as you said, you know, supply chain management and corporate management has been looking at cybersecurity quite a bit in the last year, couple of years. And I'll get into it. So first off, yeah, the Food Fraud Prevention Academy at foodfraudprevention.com. That's where all of our training is. So to move ahead, there we go. Okay. Resources. So we have our MOOCs, the Massive Open Online Courses. And then two down there, new ones are with USDA. We were funded by USDA to develop two training programs for their organic program for their inspectors. And that goes deeper into food fraud. And if you're interested in different food fraud resources, we've got our textbook here. So if you need some resources, you've got that got there for you. So also something new is the food fraud textbook went at the question from the food fraud side, from the food science side. I'm now in the Department of Supply Chain Management. We're looking at this from the supply chain management general business side. So new book coming out in October. There it'll cover case studies of food fraud prevention. Cybersecurity has been a focus of that for a long time, you know, long before we have this presentation. Applying enterprise risk management. That's important for everything that we do because that helps calibrate how much is enough. And then this is required reading for undergraduates at Michigan State University for all business school students. They take my class. And so we're interacting with future business leaders from the very start. And then the key here is that this is really supply chain management. So me from within the department teaching supply chain managers best practices about supply chain management. And then by the way, we look at things like disruptions and then include things like food safety, food fraud and prevention. And so we're now just trying to explain from the very start that food fraud prevention is a part of just good business practice. So we're not pushing it directly from the food science side over and saying, hey, understand our science. We're pushing it from their side of the table. And there's scmintro.com. So how did I get to cybersecurity? And one of my really great colleagues, one industry leader, reminds me, stay in your lane. There's plenty to do in food fraud. That's true, but let's look at how food fraud prevention expanded to cybersecurity. Well, one is e-commerce and food. And food fraud. So online marketplaces, different sales channels, stolen and diverted goods are sold there. So I've been interacting in that space a bit before. And then even the food fraud vulnerability assessment, conducted assessments, it was 2017 and 2015, I think, about e-commerce. So it wasn't necessarily cybersecurity, but it was in the related field. And definitely research further on about food fraud at the base. And then ISO 22000, and just a couple of years ago, the update of ISO 22000 included a new section that talked about external issues, and it said cybersecurity and food fraud. And I don't know if they meant to have a comma there or not. It looks like they were including cybersecurity with food fraud, but cybersecurity is broader than just that. But the ISO 22000 item there that led us to have to look at food fraud more closely. But then since cybersecurity was in the same quoted section, we had to look at that. So ISO 22000 brought us into that field. And then really this question of is it cybersecurity separate or together or a little bit of both? And then supply chain management education. So I'm responsible for developing and teaching the introduction to supply chain management course for all business school students, whether they're going to be supply chain or other areas. And cybersecurity is a big issue. So that's how we came together. And then I realized it really came together under this idea of doing assessments on novel threats. So there's all these problems. We're worried about this and that. How do we understand it? What do we do? How do we start? And that the same questions that people were asking about cyber are questions that we had been dealing with food fraud, with the initial screening, with the vulnerability assessment, and the overall VASP type concept. So that led us to need to go into the field to look at the basics, which we're going to give you today. Okay, I'll get it. So then in the textbook, the new book is being developed. So we have a new chapter section on cybersecurity and ISO 22000. And if you click here or use the QR code, you can get to a Google Doc, a shared doc that you can comment or edit. So please go in there and look at what we're doing. And if you think there's some different things we should cover in a little different way, please be a part of that. And if you do comment, then we'll have you on the update list when we have updates to comment. That chapter is going to expand from just ISO 22000 to others, but that's the real core because we're coming at this from food safety. So definitely contribute, be a part of this, help us help ourselves in the field. So agenda, the role of the food safety manager in cybersecurity or vice versa. That's interesting because a lot of times I hear in some of the food safety groups, leader groups I'm involved with is like, we got to do something. We got to take control of this. It's food defense, it's food safety, it's other things. At the same time, the cybersecurity IT teams are very involved and have been very involved. We in general are not IT experts. You don't have a master's in information technology or cybersecurity. The cybersecurity and IT people aren't experts in food safety. They don't have a master's degree or bachelor or whatever training in food safety, food science, food authenticity. That's real key to just set out at the start that we don't do their job, they don't do our job. We need to collaborate. And that's what you'll see at the very end here is the standards and certifications and systems emphasize bringing together the system experts, the functional area experts that know about those critical infrastructure protection, the CIP, and bring them together with the experts in the field like cyber. So I kind of gave away the end. So I'm not a very good storyteller, I guess, if I tell you who done it at the end. So, agenda. So I'm going to start a broad view of look at the Food Safety Modernization Act, food safety management systems, what's required in FSMA and ISO 22000. And ISO 22000 is the foundation for GFSI, so it's a good place to start. And then look briefly at those cyber standards. Go to the core, the foundation, the fundamentals of their expert field, and then put those together. And in the cyber standards will be the NIST standards and programs to start. And then looking at the ISO 27000 information security. I know Paul has a lot of experience with that, so I'll open for his discussion. And then there's a newer 27034 on cybersecurity. So the perfect place to start to look at international standards that are in place in the area where we're asking questions.
John, just when we sure. get there. So for those who don't know, if you think that this isn't going to hit you or this isn't part of our industry, the world's largest meat processing company, JBS, they just paid the equivalent of over $11 million to hackers who broke into its computer system late last month. They were a victim of a ransomware attack. And Dr. John, with that recent cyber attack that really shut down the largest meat supplier in the world, I think that alone really should be a big wake-up call for many of us. But these examples keep happening and are going to continue to happen across the different industries, including large and small food operations. So, in your opinion, what are some of the key areas of vulnerability that you think a food business would or might face today?
The big thing is at the very beginning, us asking these questions to say, we need to get involved in this, we need to understand it. For me, it goes back to the basic risk management concepts that we covered in food fraud at the start is identify specific incidents. And then assess them, have a strategy, and then figure out what countermeasures or controls are in place. So let's think about the laptop you're watching this on. You're not an expert in the code that wrote the antivirus software. That's cybersecurity. But what you did is, if it was your own computer, you decided Norton or McAfee or whoever you were going to buy. You selected the software, you pay for it, and then you do what it says it tells you to do. You're not an expert in cybersecurity. You now have a feeling that your laptop is in control and you're accountable for it, but you're not responsible for every aspect. I think that's the point where we are now to say, okay, yeah, what is the role of the cyber in cybersecurity is the food safety manager. And we have to go back to look at what all is being done in that space to figure out what our role is and if we're doing enough. At the very beginning, if you don't know what's going on, it's starting to ask those questions, which leads perfectly into what do you need to do? And so we'll look first at those food safety standards before looking at what are best practices in cyber. So first off, Food Safety Modernization Act, 2016, it came out. Really the core most basic concept is listed here. The hazard analysis must be written regardless of its outcome. This doesn't say not cybersecurity. It doesn't say including cybersecurity. It says hazard analysis. So if you believe that cybersecurity, something about attacking a system, attacking a recipe, access, shutting off a refrigerator on a truck or something like that, if that is a hazard, then FSMA says you have to do an analysis. Now, again, is cybersecurity explicit or implicit? It's implicit because, in a way, I guess, oddly, covertly implicit maybe, because it says hazard analysis. The laws are very broad, any hazard, and that's great that the laws are broad for that reason from a regulatory standpoint, hard for us because everything's included in there. If it's a hazard, it must be assessed. So, well, that's not very much help. Other than to say, yeah, it's in there, kind of. I mean, is FDA auditor going to ask you about this? Probably not. If there's a problem, if there's a hack, if cybersecurity lack of controls is the cause of a food safety incident, then it will definitely be discussed. But let's keep going. So food safety, the GFSI, this is version 2020, the latest one. When I looked at up keywords, cyber, zero, internet, zero, information technology, zero, no cybersecurity requirements. But let's look at the definitions. Food defense, the process must ensure security of food, all forms of intentional malicious attack. So, yes or no question, if someone hacking into your manufacturing computer controls could lead to a public health threat for intentional harm, is that included in all forms of intentional malicious attacks? Yes, so it's not, cybersecurity is not explicitly in there, but it is implicitly included. Same with looking at food safety, you know, assurance that any product within the scope of recognition will not cause adverse health effects. That doesn't say except for cybersecurity, it just says your system is under control. So the bottom line is we see that it's implicit. Addressing food safety and cyber threats are implicit in the laws and certifications. Let's go further. HACCP. So think about HACCP. And HACCP is not just only for food safety. HACCP is a basic quality management and risk management control system. It just is applied, the hazards are food safety hazards. Now, if you then expanded that to information technology networks or food fraud as we did, that's VASIP, vulnerability assessment, threats for food defense, the same basic concepts apply. So remember that. And the key is in the HACCP as it's defined in GFSI still is identifies and evaluates, controls and monitors hazards. It doesn't say not cyber. It doesn't say specifically cyber. So again, it's implicitly in these standards. Then corporate and customer requirements. So, you know, beyond the basic food safety is supplier qualification. And we see from a supply chain management side that there's more recognition and a set of requirements for cybersecurity. That's information flow, control the information, just generally protecting networks. So that's clearly being included in the supplier qualification. So again, if you make a food product and you're going to sell it to a food company, then most likely in that supplier quality assurance, supplier onboarding process, they're looking at this. Also, you and your company will have information technology or cybersecurity standards. You probably have some type of training you have to take. Information about phishing and malware and, you know, emails and things like that. So there's other areas that we can leverage to make sure that we're protecting our systems. So the hot topics, and this will get into some of the things that you said. Why are we worried about this? This is not just some theoretical, hypothetical issue. It's something that's going on in the world. Now, the question is if it's happening in the world and in our local business, is it affecting our specific work in food safety management? That's a big question, but let's start to look at the incidents anyway. It's a high-profile incident. You might not know that much about it. I didn't until I started looking at it, but SolarWinds, this was some malware that was in computer routers, Wi-Fi routers, that was actually used in a lot of military or defense applications, and it allowed a malicious software the access to the systems. That really started the cybersecurity focus in the U.S. And then Colonial Pipeline. So in the middle of COVID, if you remember that ransomware, they proactively shut down their entire system. Now, the malware got on one of their kind of tangent business processes, more like human resources activity, but they didn't know how far it went in the system. And they didn't know if all of a sudden things like pumps could be left open on fuel lines. That would not be a good thing. So they even though it was only part of their system that had the malware and the shutdown, they shut their entire network down to make sure that they purged everything. JBS, yeah, so JBS had ransomware and it encrypted a server, meaning that, you know, when they're one of those central servers that's access to communication within the company, shut it down. And then they had to pay for it to be decrypted in there. Now, that wasn't getting into controlling manufacturing and operations. It was very much of a brute force attack, but still, it identified the nature of vulnerabilities to a system like in a food company. Genome information cyber theft. This is much broader, but we've got these massive data sets that we as a country or as industry or companies are developing that are extremely valuable, intellectual property. And so to hack into and just download the data set is extremely valuable. And that's something that's been done, and those data sets are very vulnerable. So generally intellectual property of data. Ultimar Water Authority. So this was one that did have a direct access that led to potential public health harms. There was remote access, and it changed the levels of lye that was going into as an ingredient additive into the local drinking water. It was supposedly only for a few minutes, 10 or 15 minutes that it got in, and they could rework that water. But still, someone had external access in there. Americold Logistics, ransomware for cold storage. And this, again, encrypted their servers. So this is a little bit more tangent, farther from the business, but still, people were able to get within your company and start to mess with the systems. You know, in that case, could they have shut down the refrigerators or changed the temperatures? State-sponsored hacking to get sensitive information in lists. So this is something that's been ongoing. This is something that's more in the news, the broad level, national security type issues of, you know, getting access to employee names or personal information or security type issues. So these are the high profile incidents that have led us to really be aware of cybersecurity at this point. Hot topics and pressure. So a key is, in addition to that, in parallel, FDA in the new era of smarter food safety program just announced a public meeting on e-commerce. And that's October 19 to 21, where they're going to deal with electronic commerce. And this is new types of distribution and communication, like ordering on an app or delivery services, things like that, meal delivery. So this is not necessarily cybersecurity, but it's in the whole area of this cyber type thing. So since these hot topics are popping up at the very beginning, it's important for us to put them all together to figure out how they fit together. And then FDA has a noted focus on B2C, that's business to consumer. So, you know, a lot of times we look at the supplier quality relationships, and this is between two businesses, but now it's really odd when you've got, you know, millions and millions of consumers, and look, they're looking really at the e-commerce and potential for food safety hazards, such as a driver for a delivery company, a taxi. You have a taxi deliver a pizza. Do they really understand food safety? You know, keeping hot things hot and cold things cold. And then specifically, FDA mentioned things like you know, subscription meal services, and then delivery, such as, you know, U.S. Postal Service, UPS, FedEx, Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, and others. So wait, is this cybersecurity or e-commerce or both? So now it's getting confusing, and again, that's why we went back to the basics.
John, I think that any one of these disruptions can potentially lead to food shortages or higher prices in retail, or even worse, cybersecurity breaches that can, you know, lead to procurement issues or inadvertent alterations to ingredients. But in your opinion, what do you feel would or could become the overall impact of a cyber attack on a food company maybe from a business and then maybe a consumer safety perspective. Any thoughts?
You know, it's interesting. I see the cyber threats very similar to things like the food fraud threats, where, you know, with food fraud, if there's when melamine got in the pet food, it was out there everywhere. So as soon as we found this problem with the melamine in the pet food, the entire pet food market basically was recalled, and you couldn't even find pet food on the shelves. And that, I think, is the ultimate, you know, system-wide problem, where you don't really know what's going on and then find out later that there's some activity. Let's say it's just a malicious hacker that's looking for entertainment, that just wants to see if they can break into the labeling system for a company, and they change something on the label. Well, all of a sudden your product's in the market and it's now mislabeled. It's unfit for commerce. So there's these even small things like that, a date code tampering, you know, that could completely disrupt the market. I think what it does at this point is says, okay, there's a lot going on. We need to come back and really think about the basics. And is that something you've kind of seen as well?
It is. Yeah. All the conversations that I'm having too, one of the common messages is to stop, take a look at all of your risk. Anything that potentially could go wrong might. And, I think you're right on point there.
I think that it's been interesting to look at this and also to think about me as a consumer. When I order something online, where do I order it from? Who do I order it from? How do I pay it? I feel pretty good with a credit card, that if there's something malicious, I can get the card to reverse the actions. But let's look at that even. So I think when we see these vulnerabilities, we look at what our requirements are, and then we look at from a food safety standpoint, and then we look at how we can adapt to make ourselves less vulnerable. And one of the real keys there is paying with a credit card. So you have some type of security there. But then one step further, to not even get your credit card information out there, is to use something like PayPal and have that set up in the system. And there's other systems now that have you one step removed. So if you just change your work process to automatically always buy through PayPal online, then you're having a different level of risk reduction than if you just had a credit card. Now, credit cards have other different benefits as well, but you're making some very fundamental decisions about everything that you do. Now, the first time you shift paying Uber from credit card to PayPal or PayPal to credit card, the first time is difficult because you're trying to figure out how to enter it and everything. And does this work? And did it actually go over? But once you've got it set up, it's automatic then. And I think that's a real key, is looking at, again, what are the requirements and what are our vulnerabilities and how can we first make some very basic changes? Now, think about your antivirus on your laptop. So whatever system you have, you pay for it. Maybe you do the upgrade. I've got the premium version. It does dark web searches on my email and things like that. The bottom line is, I just make sure that if they say my credit card's out of date and I need to update that information to subscribe, I just update my credit card. And other than that, I wait for it to tell me to do something. And if the antivirus program says stop, reboot, reload the system, then you know what I do? I stop and reboot and boot and loot it.
Right.
And loot it and load it. So that's a key, I think, putting things into place to look at our vulnerabilities. And it gets back to, what's the role of the food safety manager versus what's the role of cybersecurity and IT, and what's the role of everybody together? So that's where we're going to try to dig into that.
Thank you.
Sure. So just real quickly to look at FDA. So I definitely click into this and look at it. You can register for the meeting, be a part. You can submit comments. If you do anything in the area of e-commerce, if you're a restaurant, especially, there's going to be a lot of interesting, important information there. FDA is taking a proactive step. First, they're asking for information. It's based on basic risk management, like ISO 31000. This type of meeting is doing things like establishing the context. Do we cover, they mentioned it covers, Lyft, DoorDash, Uber, and others. So it's including those in that overall scope. And then following on to other standards such as quality management and food safety management, it's looking at the next step is to gather this incident information. So it's, what exactly are our concerns? What are exactly our vulnerabilities? Just because there's a vulnerability doesn't mean you need to prevent it or work against it. Let's say hailstorms. So if it's a sunny day here in Michigan, I'm not worried about hail today. Now, could hail happen? Yes. I'm not going to change my operations. Now, if there's a big thunderstorm and they say hail is coming, we don't usually get the big hail. But I might stay in if I know there's a lightning storm, so I'm not so worried about hail. Now, when we lived in Houston, sometimes there would be like, they would say softball size hail could be coming. Now, if I hear there's softball size hail, I'm staying inside and I'm moving the cars in the garage, in a parking garage. There was a mall near us, you know, hide the cars away, you know, cover glass. So those are different levels of risk. And that's what FDA is doing here. They're looking at and gathering types of incidents and that's really specific to the type of product. And we really need to truly look at where there are true dangers, and specifically in the food safety area. And the key steps include at the very beginning of mapping the supply chains. So let's look at delivery by, a pizza restaurant that has their own employees that deliver is different than a pizza restaurant that utilizes a contract third party, or someone where they buy, you know, a consumer buys through another group. Let's look at all the supply chain. We'll look at the controls there. We'll look at any risks, you know, how quickly is product delivered. Look at the product flows and who handles the product. And then also what's interesting here is, it provides a lot of information and really looking at the criminology concept of hot spot analysis is the ultimate application, where you find the incidents, you look at the type of accidents that occur, the real problems, and look at what happens there. And as a reference, they could look at the USDA Organic Integrity Learning Center training, because there's a lot of detail there training the USDA inspectors. So anybody looking at the e-commerce side of things, from FDA side of things, already has a lot of great resources there, and they're starting from a very solid foundation.
John, I just wanted to mention one thing here. The conference, again, that I was just at, it was the Executive Supply Chain Summit. And it was very interesting to me during one of the sessions. One of the speakers got up, I think it might have been from Microsoft, and they were talking about, how they map their global supply chain to mitigate risk. And they asked everyone in the audience, how many people here have mapped their supply chain? And I'm going to say 99.9% of them put their hands up. He said, okay, now let's go deeper. How many here in the audience have mapped their supply chain? Not one right. person put their hand up. So it's very interesting that you mentioned that, because I think sometimes it's time for us now to start thinking bigger, looking deeper, and mapping your supply chain if you really want to look at preventing risks such as cyber security.
Yeah, and that's, from a supply chain management standpoint, we talk about the tiers and echelons, tiers, first tier supplier, second tier supplier. And, it's interesting of who has controls and what information is proprietary and what can get shared. And when risks get big enough, then the company that's buying can put mandates in place. And there was a presentation by a major global retailer last week that I was on, and they said that they have a requirement for every broker that they buy from, that they still have to know it wasn't the retailer. It was a spice company that was presenting at a retail conference. But they said that even if they buy through a broker or a distributor, they need to know who manufactured that product at what plant. And they still will go through the process of auditing that plant, even though that sale is not to that from that original company. And so in that case, they've said, look, our risks are so big, so important, that if you say that it's commercially sensitive or that it's proprietary information of who you buy from, then we're not going to be able to buy from you. So that's just yes or no. That's where the rubber meets the road, when you're willing to walk away from a PO or a purchase order, or you're rejecting a load. That's where it gets really real, really fast. And so that's a key of looking at, that type of decision is made by having really good risk assessment to understand really the dangers of the enterprise.
Yeah, at least it's an educated decision then. I mean, like you said, do you walk away from the $1 million purchase order, or do you walk away from $11 million worth of brand damage and lost customers?
That's it. And at the beginning, I think that, a lot of times we haven't had enough information to make really good risk assessments. And now we're able to identify those root causes and to really see with transparency, with better testing, just the ability to test for pesticide residue or species tests for variations in product ingredients, fillers in ingredients, then there's a higher probability of getting caught. And the problem is that if you get caught today, it's probably product that's been produced for the last year. That means that not only the product in production gets recalled and destroyed, all the product in the marketplace and probably recalls. So that the danger is getting amplified. But what that does, it makes it harder for us in the food industry at the start. But if we do that risk assessment and include that in, then we're ultimately just protecting our supply chains and making them more controlled all the way back. And if we're willing to walk away from one PO from that to that broker, then that broker is losing a PO to that supplier as well, the supplier's upstream as well. So it really forces the entire system just to be competent. Some people will say, well, if we implement these food fraud prevention strategies, then our costs are going to go up. We'll say, yeah, because you were buying fraudulent, illegal product. Right. So, I mean, it doesn't really hold water yet. And so, you're already disadvantaged because you're buying fraudulent product. But that's us just taking a step back to the basics to really look at the assessment. So yeah. Those are great points. Thank you. Yeah. So by going back to those basics, it's to say, you know, what was in FSMA and GFSI? What was the nature of these threats? So we're now kind of cycling around to get a feel for again, remember the question, what is the role of the food safety manager in cybersecurity? We're trying to build down to that. So we're building up. ISO 22000. And I have observer status, so I get all the emails and I comment on things. The ISO process can be absolutely mind-numbing. It makes like getting a root canal look like something exciting. It can be very slow, but it's supposed to be slow because it's an international standard. So first off, ISO 22000 builds on ISO 9000, the quality management, risk management. It's nothing really new. There's a subcommittee there that works on all these issues. They look at health hazards from food safety incidents. That's a key. Like GFSI, it looks at all root causes, but then focuses on the health hazards. They want to reduce health hazards and increase the methodology to reduce the possibility of incidents. That's a key. It's a quality management system. It looks at all the vulnerabilities, all the root causes, and tries to understand them and reduce them. It's not only the top 10. It's not only ones that could kill more than 100 people. It's all of them. And that's where ISO 22000 fits in. Focus on health hazards. And there's new food fraud requirements in 2018. And this is the foundation for GFSI. So it's an important document for us looking at it in food safety. There are a lot of sections in here. 22000 would be a management system. That's the overall concept. Like a chapter, and then there's specific areas. So that first one is the overall guidance, and then there's details on general advice, then there's specific traceability, looking at, then also into specific industries, like for catering, farming, food packaging, and audit certification bodies. So that's generally what ISO 22000 does. It's a broad food safety management system with a lot of other standards below it. And the overview is, again, like I mentioned, to prevent health hazards or reduce health hazard to acceptable levels. So to understand if a health hazard is at an acceptable level or if a prevention action is enough, you have to assess it. You have to assess it first and then judge if it's a problem. So that is a true actual assessment. And that falls under this whole hazard analysis concept. So cybersecurity requirements in 22000, what are they? And the scope really is anything that could lead to a food safety health hazard. And they then expanded this to talk about external and internal issues. So right there, an external issue could be something from the internet coming in, cybersecurity. And then in this next section includes a note where it does say, including but not limited to, cybersecurity and food fraud. So a question that I had when I saw this was, my mom was a grammar school teacher, is that cybersecurity and food fraud together? Or do they really mean and, or should there be a comma in there? Are they two separate concepts? Well, if you look at this, that statement is within a long string. So they are combining cybersecurity and food fraud, and that led us to need to look at it. I think really it should be separate. They're two different concepts, but maybe this is very early in the way that ISO 22000 is looking at it. This is the first time food fraud has been mentioned in a food standard, and the first time cybersecurity has as well. So maybe it's just a starting point. Maybe it's a bit of an oversight. But bottom line is cybersecurity and food fraud are both in there together or as separate concepts. So then looking there is, so how formal or direct are those cybersecurity requirements? There's no further details or explicit compliance requirements. And ISO 22000 does not have a definition of cybersecurity. So that's really difficult. You're required to cover cybersecurity, but it's not defined. But we've got other places that we look at different types of controls. And in ISO 28000 is supply chain security. It does not mention cybersecurity at all as well, although that's an older standard that was published before cybersecurity was really defined. But so we didn't get any help there. GFSI benchmarking document does not mention cybersecurity, so we still don't have any help. So now what? Do you just go ahead and ignore it? Well, you probably could get away with that a bit, but what we'll do is look at if there's any insight of cybersecurity mentioned anywhere else in ISO. What we're trying to do here is, as a food safety manager, to give you the resources, give you the citations, the quotes, to explain and identify what your role is and what your role is not. So you're not just saying, oh, it's undefined, it's fuzzy. So if you have a problem, is your CFO going to be okay? If you're the VP of quality, you say, it was fuzzy, we didn't deal with it. No, you really need to look further. So that's what we did. So now we then look at the base of cybersecurity to get a feeling for what they're doing in that area, and then what the role is for us as an area food safety manager. And Paul, you've got some 27,000 experience, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So, well, you know, we talk about certification to ISO 27001 or the former 20,000. For the technology side, and also CMMC and NIST that you're going to talk a little bit about here as well. I've worked with companies all across, the industry to implement various, security standards in their business as well. ISO 27001 seems to be, still more focused around the information security. But cybersecurity, I personally see that becoming, a very real thing and a much bigger standard in the next coming years.
Yeah, and what I see here is that, it starts to define some roles for us. So those are things that we in food safety can push back into IT or be involved in IT and know what our roles are. But let's look at the basics. We're going to build on, their world and then figure out where we fit in. So first off, NIST. The U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology. If you don't know about NIST, then it's probably one of the biggest, most important agencies or activities, not an agency, but a group within the U.S. government, one of the most important ones you don't know about. It's within the U.S. Department of Commerce, and it really coordinates this measurement standards, including information security standards for federal computer systems. So that's a big part of the marketplace. It also manages other things like how much is a gallon. So that when we're selling product, we have some type of standard. That's the most basic. But a key is that they do have these cybersecurity, information security standards that have become the real foundation for all of the other international and domestic standards, other activities. So they have this thing called their NIST Cybersecurity Framework. So this is when they have a project, it's U.S. Department of Commerce. It's basically everybody is involved trying to put this together to have some central concepts, definitions, and foundations. They also have this information security handbook, guide for managers. So right there, that's a pretty basic place to start, right? The handbook for managers based on this whole thing about information security. And then the third one that's the most basic fundamental concepts here are managing information security. And so these three reports really create the foundation for everything else that's done in the area. Now, these may be very broad or very basic citations, but these are the foundation. And so we build upon that.
Yeah, John, even in the, with the U.S. government, they've mandated recently a program known as CMMC, or the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification Program. It is run by the CMMCAB, which is essentially the accreditation body. And I think at last count, there were about 300,000 contractors or suppliers that supply the U.S. Department of Defense, and they've mandated the CMMC standard, which is based on the NIST cybersecurity framework as well. So it's not going anywhere anytime soon, and even the U.S. government's mandated it.
And the thing I see with that is that, you know, like you said, how many suppliers are there for the U.S. government? So if you're one of those big suppliers, you're going to look at the standards and certification that are out there that are required. This is required. So it's one of those to get started. And then we get momentum. And we've seen that with food safety along the way. And so this is the place that starts. This is implemented. And more is on the way. They actually have a draft guidance document on cybersecurity right now. So that's coming as well. So it's really the foundation. So we feel comfortable that when we look at the ISO 22000 and others, we're building upon all the major common starting points. So it's not like you're going to go down a path. You're not going to pick Betamax versus VHS for videotapes for those of us that are a little older. You're not going to pick a different system. This is the basic core system that people are looking at. And then looking briefly at 27000, the 27000 series, really these are it's an overall management system standard. So that's looking at just coordinating all these specific activities. Within there is 27001, which is the actual requirements. That's really what you'd be certified against at the start if you're IT. And then 27032 is cybersecurity. So that's just a little bit more detailed there. And they do have a definition there, and it's really important to go back and start with the basic definitions. Information Security Incident Management, ISIM. That's the real core of what's going on. So in your company, if you're 27,000 certified, if you sell to the U.S. government, you have an ISIM. And that's a key. That's like a food safety management system. You can have your food fraud activity, other activity work into that overall management system. So that's a real key. There are these things that are in place somewhere in your company. And 27001 has got those basic requirements. And that's then say you shall do this and do that. So that's the basics of the 27000 as the foundation. Now, within 27000, they also have this the specific cybersecurity. So here is the 27034. And a real key for me when we're looking at what our requirements are the definitions. And so really looking at cybersecurity is looking at this preserving confidentiality and integrity of your information in the cyberspace. So, now we've got another term there. So what's cyberspace versus the internet? So cybersecurity is controlling the information, controlling the cyber activity, the network. Then the cyberspace, and I didn't know this is an actual definition until I saw it. So complex environment resulting from the interaction of people, software, and services on the internet. So cybersecurity would be like your company's system, the way your company acts on the internet. That's the cyberspace. Cybersecurity is protecting your own stuff, your own systems. And the internet is more like that interaction outside, which is defined. The internet or internet work, collection of interconnected networks. So all of a sudden we're just getting clearer of who's what and where. Cybersecurity is your system, your network. The internet. Is that global system of interconnected networks. And then internet security is confidentiality and integrity availability on the internet. So cybersecurity is protecting your company, your systems within your systems. And then internet security is when information is flowing around outside of your network. So we're already now defining these pieces, which is really great. That's what we want to do. And then others. Well, I'm sorry, virtual world, a simulated environment accessed by multiple users through an online interface. So that's like out in a e-commerce marketplace, maybe the virtual world. Now we get down to these issues like the FDA, e-commerce. So from NIST, the use of network technology to buy or sell goods or services. Now we get some clarity. E-commerce is different than cyberspace. And we now define, we have an exact formal compliance-based, standards-based definition to look at. This also helps us look into this FDA's Smarter Food Safety definition of e-commerce for their conference. They're looking at specifically B2C e-commerce. So not just interacting on the internet and sales, it's businesses to consumers is their focus. So look, we've already gone from all the cybersecurity things we're worried about into the cyberspace, the internet, e-commerce, and then B2B e-commerce. So it's been helpful here to dig in further. And then just as a point, e-business versus e-commerce. E-commerce is selling products, buying and selling products on the internet. e-business is using electronic, the internet, and cyberspace to conduct operations, like purchasing, selling, tracking, inventory, managing production, handling logistics, supplying communication support services, and others. A key there is that we now have within the cyberspace a lot of separate areas. Some of that has sensitive customer information. Some of that is financial transactions. Some of that is bidding. Some of that is process control. So now we're breaking it down, and some of those may be more of a concern for us than others. So then is the final push here is to look at this specifics of cybersecurity, because we're trying to now see what is our role for food safety management. So combining those two, looking at ISO 22000 and then leveraging what's in and directed by ISO 27032, the cybersecurity. So when we look at this document, it really there's a big emphasis on collaboration. It's not just your job, and it's not just the IT department's job. It's working together, and there's such an emphasis there. Think about like food safety. Is it just the food safety group's job? No, you work with purchasing, you work with operations, you work with logistics, handling product, and really it's a bigger system. And that's exactly the same with what's going on here. A key for the food safety managers, you're not accountable for writing software code. You're not accountable for managing these big networks in your system. That's something bigger. And it covers different areas such as information security. So that's controlling like access to customer lists, personal information, network security. So that's people getting into your system and messing with it, and internet security. And then finally, critical information infrastructure protection. This could also be for something we're used to saying is it's noted to be different than critical infrastructure protection, CIPs. But CIPs are more what we look at in food safety. So now we look at this, everybody working together. Again, you don't need to be an expert in the internet or the networks or network security. That's their job. You are an expert on the critical infrastructure. That's where you contribute to make sure that if you've got a concern about a very sensitive process, maybe a refrigeration needs to stay at a certain level and there could be some access, then you can ask specific questions. You identify the vulnerabilities and then ask the core team to review the strength of the protection for that critical infrastructure. And also, key is that this standard doesn't go into details of the critical infrastructure protection. It references and relies on other expert areas in ISO, such as 22000 and 28000 for supply chain management. So now we've dug down, and we now can see a clear link from cybersecurity into our expert standards like 22000 and back. So we've identified this specific point where it does cross over. And so it's really good that we've dug down this far to find that point. So you're not an expert in IT or cybersecurity, and they're not an expert in food safety or the food manufacturing operations. That's the collaboration point to come together to have you make sure to clarify. If the lights go out in your office, it's one thing, but if the metal detector on your fill line goes off, that's really bad. So it's to identify that critical infrastructure and which ones should be really monitored and protected the most. So to get down here to this call to action. So cybersecurity for food safety managers, and this is really ISO 22000. The key is thinking about accountable versus responsible. And this is something I focus on a lot because, again, you could be, well, I'm accountable to myself for finding a good antivirus software for my computer and using it and updating it. I'm not responsible for writing the code. Once I decide on the software, I'm okay with what I've chose. Now, you're accountable and you are to confirm your company meets ISO 22000. That's what you're accountable for. At the start, just do we meet ISO 22000? Remember, one part of ISO 22000 is cybersecurity. So let's just go a little further. You're accountable for explaining to your IT cyber group about your critical infrastructure protection, your CIAPs, and your critical information protection. So you're accountable to make sure that they know which systems and networks are the most concerning. Again, you're not it's not your job. It's not your expert area or your responsibility for selecting the right countermeasures, but just to identify those. You're responsible for, or the cyber team is responsible and is tasked with selecting and implementing those processes across the entire enterprise. And really, this leads to a harmonized and coordinated approach that levels the enterprise risk tolerance. The key is that if maybe you really have a good understanding of certain systems, and your colleagues in the transportation department don't, well, they need to learn from you. You need to learn from them. They may have some different areas or expertise that helps your system. And at the enterprise level, company-wide, you want to be sharing information and looking at these risks across the entire enterprise, because you're going to learn from each other. There's also some economies of scale where you can have somebody that's expert on a certain type of transaction. Responsible. You are responsible that your team follows the IT and cybersecurity requirements, such as updates. And that's something that's been brought up, that someone did an audit of a plant, and there was some computer that was doing process control, and it didn't have updated operating system, didn't have updated antivirus, and it was connected to the internet somehow. So within operations, it is your job to make sure that if IT says, report and record all the computers that you use, it's your job to make sure that computer is listed. Now, again, it's not your job to say that it's not not secure. That's for IT to be a part of, but it's your role to make sure that everybody knows what's going on. And then from NIST, here's the bottom line. The whole day gets down to this. From NIST, ISO 22000 and others, you are not accountable or responsible for conducting IT cyber security assessments or selecting, implementing, and managing those systems. That's the bottom line. So now you're a part of the system. Remember that with the critical infrastructure. I'm pulling up something else here. You're accountable for that. You are not accountable for doing those assessments or implementing the systems. You are accountable for being active on the cyber team, for explaining those critical infrastructure risks, and you're also accountable and responsible for your team to be making sure to implement those systems. So everything boils down to this. Again, I think you've got a good starting point now to really look at what you're doing. And at this point, then it's to contact your IT team to talk about the critical infrastructure. So with that, Paul and Amy, went a little bit longer than normally try, but we had a lot to cover there, and I didn't try to just talk really fast. I would say to everybody, please.
Hit fast forward on you.
No, I would say that if this has been interesting, definitely go look at our chapter section, contribute, push us, ask more questions, and make sure to let us know if you think we need to go deeper or into some different concepts. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Spink. Let me go ahead and get us going so we can see what kind of questions we got in the questions box. Just really quick, I'm going to put this up on the screen. These are some of the upcoming webinars we have. We have a schedule of webinars coming up through the end of the year now. So go ahead, and they're all free to register. You can find a full listing on our website at pgrfsi.com/webinars. And we hope to see you on many more. So I'm going to go ahead right into the Q&A. It looks like we have a question here from Yusuf. And Yusuf is wondering if the food fraud concepts can be also applied to halal fraud.
Absolutely. Well, because and actually within food fraud, the GFSI requirements, it talks about documentation fraud. It includes halal, kosher, organic, and others, a fair trade. So you look at the vulnerability, you identify potential incidents, you identify the root cause of those incidents, and then try to reduce the vulnerability. One thing that's great is USDA, their National Organic Program, has examples of fraudulent organic documents. You can look at those to then try to understand where there could be other types of document fraud that would be similar like that to halal, kosher, or others.
All right, awesome. I know we're running low on time, but let me ask you one more question from the audience. This one is from Jennifer. Jennifer is wondering, out of the examples I think that you mentioned earlier, John, of you know, cybersecurity incidents out at large. Which ones of those do you think were handled especially well by the organization or company or whoever was the target of those attacks?
Wow. Well, what I'll say is that there's a lot of new vulnerabilities that have been identified. And I think the big key is how people responded afterwards. And once you realize that something's a real problem, then that's been, you know, have they formalized the processes later? And to follow up, it's one thing, you know, early on in food safety, we had one food safety incident after another. You just got done. He's like, whew, okay, well, now we're back to production. And the same problem came up. At some point, people said, we have to shift and look at root causes. And I think that's the key to all of this. Now, I've only heard a little bit of some people that will, like for the ransomware, that shut an entire network gets encrypted. Well, one problem companies in that situation have is that they don't have a backup of it. So like for me, I have cloud-based backup of my entire, every computer that we have is cloud-based backup in real time. So, and actually we have multiple backups. So if I had a ransomware right now, encrypted my entire computer and I couldn't access it, all I'd have to do is do a system reset. And it would be a hassle to reload the software, but I know that up to a few minutes ago, everything was already backed up. So we would have a minor inconvenience if my family's computer systems got completely locked up. And that's what people all of a sudden realized with their whole network. It's like, wow, that's why we didn't have access. So they then realized that vulnerability and move forward. Now, hopefully we don't wait for incidents to trigger our action, that we can then, if you have that real information management system in place in parallel to your food safety management system, you're looking for those vulnerabilities, and maybe it's a specific piece of equipment that needs to be the metal detector on your line, metal detector versus electronic control of the lights in your office. That metal detector needs to have it's a higher level vulnerability, and so it needs to have a higher level of protection and focus, vigilance than some of the other systems. So I intentionally did not answer your question. Sorry.
No problem. All right. I think that was it for audience questions. But if anyone had any more specific questions regarding your organization or your business practices, we're more than happy to accept questions via email. You can send those over to pdrfsi@pdrfsi.com. If you want to address them to Dr. Spink, we're more than happy to forward them his way. And again, Dr. Spink, thank you so much again for taking the time. It's always great to have you on, and always so much information in your presentations. Absolutely love to have you in. So with that, I'm going to wrap things up. If anyone missed part of the presentation or wanted to go back and maybe access those QR codes for those resources, the slides from this presentation should be up within the next couple of days at pdrfsi.com. So I absolutely encourage you all to go download them. And the recording will also be up and available for review with the voiceover included. So with that, everyone, I hope you have a great rest of your week. Stay safe and stay healthy out there. We'll see you on the next webinar. Have a great day.
Thank you.